staying with her poetry, we'll get into our book review now. And this is on the letters of Dennis Glover. It has been edited by Sarah Schrieff. If I'm pronouncing that correctly, Sarah Schrieff, I beg your pardon. And here to review it for us is Harry Ricketts. Good morning to you, Harry. Come and have a seat.
Good morning. Good morning.
A lavish hardback here.
It is. It's a real doorstopper. No disparagement intended. This is 500 letters to around 500 letters to around 110 correspondents drawn from an archive of 3,000 to 430 correspondents. So this is a sort of greatest hits volume, as it were. Now, I just thought I'd start. This is a model of how to do these things. Brilliantly put together. It's got all the paratextual material you would need, enough about the coordinates and landmarks of Glover's own life at the beginning in an introductory material, about just enough about the correspondence. Each letter has got relevant footnotes, sometimes a bit of the correspondence that it's engaged with. You know, it's kind of a model of its kind. And it has this interesting little comment as part of the introduction, which I just thought I'd start with. By the end of his life, and for many younger people, Glover has become little more than a tarsome anachronism, a misogynistic old fart, a court jester, a drunken laughing stock, a quadler. These letters should give readers the opportunity to revise or at least complicate those dismissive categorisations. So that's a nice little example of how neatly Sarah Schrieff can write herself. But it also kind of points us up to, you know, what she's trying to do in the project. Collected letters rarely appear in somebody's lifetime. They're part of the literary afterlife, like diaries can be sometimes. So, you know, this is a kind of project to encourage us to see Glover in a slightly different light, as a personality, as a human being, also through his, you know, kind of manifold literary activities. There's not much about the poetry. There are little bits about the poetry from time to time. So, I imagine that behind this is a desire for people to move from the letters back to the poems. You know, and he did have a very specific kind of lyric gift. And, you know, if I might say, would have enjoyed Ruby's poems. He would have liked the direct utterance. He would have liked the stripped-down language, you know, the direct communication. Those were all things that he aimed for in his own work. So, no, as a scholarly job, this is absolutely phenomenal. The letters themselves, he's got a range of correspondence. Some readers, I'm imagining two potential readers for this. One is the sort of student of New Zealand literature, and they will find an absolute treasure trove of all sorts of things here to do with New Zealand literary culture between the 1930s and when Glover died in 1980. So there's a voluminous correspondence with Curnow, with Sargerson, Brash, Mason, A.R.D. Fairburn, latterly with Robin Dudding, a whole host of people important in the literary kind of environment. And so there'll be a lot of interest there for the things that, you know, were on their minds, the kind of project that they were trying to do with, as they saw it, with New Zealand literature at the time. Of course, 40 years on, the scene looks very different. So it's interesting to contrast their priorities with, you know, how things have kind of panned out. So Glover, no, I wouldn't claim, you know, he's no Byron, you know, who's one of the great letter writers of all time. But he's always a lively performer. Letters are always a performance to somebody, amongst other things. So with somebody like Rupert Curtis that he served with in the Second World War, Glover, of course, was a distinguished naval officer in the Second World War, and his naval career, which he was quite humble about, was a very distinguished one. So he's the old sea dog with Rupert Curtis. He's the printer poet with Curnow and Sargeson and Brash. Sometimes he was literally their printer and publisher, but he's also a kind of collaborator with them in a sort of shared project. So those letters are interesting. During the war, he wrote voluminously to his first wife, Mary. Sarah Sheaf makes it clear that he wasn't quite the devoted husband that he makes himself out to be in these letters. So that's done properly, but discreetly. So we're aware that, for instance, he was having at least one affair when he was over in London on shore leave with Dvorah Elkind, I think that's how you pronounce her name. And the letters to her are much... a rather saucier, I would say, slightly racier than the ones to Mary. Glover had a complicated love life, and these letters give some insight into that. Gordon Ogilvie's biography, if people are interested, will give you more. So the letters are interesting, they're lively. I particularly enjoyed the war letters, I have to say. I found those really interesting. New Zealand and the Second World War, my knowledge of that is quite gappy, and Glover's experience certainly fills in certain sides of that in a fascinating kind of way. I'm also, of course, interested personally in the literary culture side of you know, his role with Caxton Press and then with subsequently with other presses, his role on the Lit Fund. He was a pen representative on the New Zealand Lit Fund in the 50s, so he played a role with Sargeson in helping Janet Frame to get a grant to take her over to Europe. So he's somebody who's got a finger in various pies. I thought...
Go ahead, good time.
Okay, if I've got time, I'll just read a little bit. Here's a little bit of a letter, a wartime letter, to Mary, his wife, about an action that he's taken part in. And just gives you a little bit of a sense of how, you know, when he's not really putting on any airs here. He's trying to be as direct as possible. So there... They're engaging with a German warship. I couldn't help feeling awfully sorry to see a fine big ship getting such a merciless pasting from a well-armed destroyer. He was on the destroyer. But there was always the chance of a torpedo or concealed guns, and at 2,500 yards just over the road for naval gunnery, we closed in, still firing, and raked her with pom-poms as well. Two torpedoes from us, and she lit up from end to end with a dull glow. There was an explosion, a column of smoke, and simply nothing left. It shook one, I don't mind saying. Thomas and I were taken off our AA guns to be lookouts on the bridge, and we got a great view of the show. I wasn't very happy when I saw great spouts of water falling very close to us and heard salvos whistling past our forecastle. But it turned out to be only the crossfire from one of our concerts, so we took no notice. And then they go on and they pick up the German survivors. So he can write in a very direct, yes, effective kind of way.
Yeah, it's a treasure trove, isn't it?
It is a treasure trove. So... go for it, everybody.
Outstanding. Thank you, Harry. He has reviewed Letters of Dennis Glover. It's edited by Sarah Sheaf, published by Otago University Press, and $80 the price. Thanks to Harry Ricketts for the review.